something like this.
All right. So we're holding on some of Gimel on the days, four lines from the bottom. The Mishnah said, Kates ad Yorah. The Mishnah talked about a case where a Nazir has gone into a cave to Tovel, and then afterwards you find that we have the two possibilities over there. You find a body at the bottom of a mess, some part of a mess or whatever at the bottom of the water. Then we say that's called Tumas HaTahoim. We can assume nobody else ever saw it before, and that has certain implications as far as the halachas of Nazir, as we talked about yesterday. On the other hand, then the Mishnah continued that if you find some of it, if you find the mess floating on the surface of the water, then no matter what, it's not so much a tahoim because other people may have seen it as well, and therefore, regardless whether we found that before or after, it's tigrachas, he's tahoim and he has to start all over again. The word tahoim means the depth, the choshech al pnei tahoim. Tumas HaTahoim is called that because it's like the depths. It's like the bottom of the ocean or something. Nobody's ever seen it. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Sofa ena matami le'inyan sheret. Now when it comes to a sheret, a floating sheret is not matami. In other words, if you have for example, Tosfos gives the example. You have, let's say, you have a keli full of water and there's a sheret floating on the water. So you have a suffix whether you touched the keli and became tome from the sherets or not. Suffix means floating. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, suffix tuma tzafa, a suffix of tuma which is floating, ben the kelim ben the karka, whether in keli or whether in water that's in the ground, tahira. Then it's tahira. You're not tome in the suffix. And Tosfos points out this is even if it's in Rishus HaYachid, even though usually we would say Sotah Tumah Rishus HaYachid is Tomei, as we talked about before. Here we don't say that. Reb Shimon says it depends. Kalim Tmeya B'Karka Tahoira. If the water and therefore the sheret that was floating in it was in a keli, then you are Tomei Misafik. Only if it was in water that's in the ground, in a pit in the ground or something, then you're Tahor. My time at the Tanakama. So what's the Tanakama's reasoning? Amar Reb Yitzchak Bar Avodimi, because you have like this. See, if you have a pasuk that says B'chol Asheret Hashoreis, you have a pasuk that says that mentions any sheret that creeps around, that moves around, which would imply any place where it is, regardless of where the Kol Makom Shu Sheret, which would imply any place where it's able to be Sheret, regardless whether it's on the ground, in the water, what have you. Uchtiv Al Ha'aretz, but then you have another pasuk in that area. These are both Sukkim and these are both Sukkim in Parshas Shemini, where it says, in the same pasuk, B'chol Asheret Hasheret Al Ha'aretz. B'chol Asheret Hasheret implies regardless where it swarms. Al Ha'aretz implies only if it's on the ground. Okay, it's actually the same. It's the same pasuk, isn't it? Al Tatamos Nafshetechem B'chol Asheret Hasheret. Yeah, you're right. B'chol Asheret Hasheret Al Ha'aretz. Yeah, you're right. They're back to something. Okay, yeah. What's the story? How do we reconcile those two psukim? Okay, I mean, Pashtus, the Gemara could have said that it has nothing to do with Tumah V'Tahara anyway. It's talking actually over there about what you're allowed and not allowed to eat. You're not allowed to eat insects that swarm in the water, water bugs, for example. You're not allowed to eat insects that swarm on the ground, like ants, flying insects, etc. But the Gemara wants to take it in another way also because these psukim do mention the word Tumah. Okay. In those sukkim, alti tamu is nachisechem b'chol asheret hasheret, for example. So if it just meant isra achila, it didn't have to use the word tumah.
Alti shachter,
yeah, okay. Alti shachter is nachisechem, yeah, but okay. In sukkim over there, it does mention several times the word tumah.
Yeah.
Alti shachter means don't make yourself disgusting.
Yeah,
those are the shmoyna shiratim. Now here we're talking about smaller. That's the shmoyna shiratim. Yeah, there's a bunch of different sukkim in this connection. But yeah. Okay, so how do we reconcile? Babe magoi tomei. If you definitely touched it, then you're tomei, regardless whether it was in the water or on the ground or what have you. Sofik magoi tomei. But if it's only a sofik, whether you touched it, then we would say you're tomei when it's in the water. So then we would apply, in other words, that when there's a suffix, we say you're only tome if it was al ha'aretz, on the ground. Thus, we reconcile the two psukim. The one
when
is talking
a suffix on the ground.
When there's a suffix, that's what we're saying. When there's a suffix, and it's vishus, then it's vishus ayachid, which we learn again. We learn suffix tome vishus ayachid from Sota. Then we would say because of the second pasuk al ha'aretz, that you're always tome. But if it's on the water, then we'll say it depends. Then we say it's the difference whether it's a vaday or a suffix. So therefore, so in that sense, then there's no difference between whether we're talking about whether the water and the floating sheret are whether it's water in the ground in a pit or a puddle or something on the ground, or whether it's water in a keli.
Oh, you know, I mean, if it's you touch it, if it's in the water and your body touches it, you'll be.
Then you'll be tummy, sure. Yeah. Because since you have one pasuk that mentions kol asheretz asheretz without specifying, and another one that specifies al haaretz, so we learn that there's a difference whether it's al haaretz or whether it's in the water.
Why can't we learn that even if I touch it, it in the water?
No, because that's for sure not. Because you have a different pasuk. You have a different pasuk that says v'negev ach mayin uvor mikvamayim yeter v'negev nivlosim yitma. You have a pasuk that says that if you're touching a nevela or anything else, any other sort of tumah. Even while you're in the water, this is the famous tovel of a sheriff. You have somebody tovel while holding a sheriff, and they're in the end. Rip Shim in my time. Okay.
Because
we have it. Since we have one pasuk that says Al Ha'aretz, then it means we have a special din, Al Ha'aretz. Yeah. Rip Shim in my time. So what's your Shimon's reasoning why he distinguishes between water and kalim and water on the ground? Oma Ola, because you have a different pasuk. Ach Mayon, you have a pasuk a few pasukim earlier that mentions only a spring or mikveh or tahar. Uchsiv Yitma, it says Ad Arav over here. That's a mistake. Ad Arav is from a different pasuk. So you have one pasuk that says you have one pasuk that mentions a spring that you're tahar, and another one that says Yitma that you're tahar. There it actually is the same pasuk. Ach Mayon avod mikveh mayim yeter v'negev v'nevlasim Yitma. Okay, so how do you distinguish? So that's where Rabbi Shimon gets his reason for distinguishing that if it's in the ground, it's like a mayan, then you're tahar. The sofik, obviously, not the vade. But if it's not in a mayan, even though it is water, but it's not a mayan or a burr, therefore the sofik you're tahar.
If it's a mayan, meaning what?
Meaning a spring. If the sheriff is in a spring. In the water of the spring. It's collected over there or flowing or whatever over there. Or burr, the pasuk mentions both Mayan and burr, or spring and a pit. So then if the sheriff is in them and you touch and you have a suffix whether you touched it, then you're tahar. But not if it's in the water in a container. If you touch them, then you're tahar, yeah.
Second option when the
sheriff's
in the
keli. If you have water in a keli and you have a sheriff in there and you're not sure if you touch the sheriff or not.
Oh, in the
keli. Yeah. Oh. We learn it about the kolan tolen vanigror. In anything that's held in the hand or that's dragged along the ground, seikam tome, if you have a suffix, whether somebody else, you have Reuven, for example, carrying a piece of a sheriff, and Shimon having a suffix, whether he touched it. Sveikam tome, then misofik, it's tome, and pneshen kumunachen. We consider it as if it's placed on the ground. Because you, mitolin means that it's picked up in the hand, or actually, Hagos Hagra brings another girsa over here, which the Rambam also uses, nitlin rather, anything that's suspended. So Tosfos gives the example. Let's say you have one person standing in the water, and somebody else is holding a sheret, is holding a dead sheret on a string. Did the person in the water touch it or not?
And it's
a test. Nitolin, which we have in our Gemara, which we have here in the printed Gemara, means that it's picked up. Unless you know you're dying. No, unless you know you're dying. The gear with a test. It means suspended. Finally growing, or that's being dragged along. Fake and tome, then misophic, they're tome, neshen, kumunachin. We consider it as if they're placed on the ground or on the water. Since you have a person handling it, then you don't have it, you can't call it tumat safa. This din that we just mentioned before about tumat safa, that floating tumah, that misafa kistar, only applies when it's floating on its own, not when somebody is holding it, like on a string or whatever. Vanizrakin, the tumah that is thrown, Sveikam tahar, then the suffix is, then misafik your tahar. So if somebody throws a piece of a sheretz, for example, and you're not sure whether it touched something or not, then you're tahar. Chutzmin kazayis a mess v'amayel apnei tumah, except for a kazayis of a mess, or somebody who himself is an oil on top of tumah, a person who walks in the water, for example, and then later on you find a piece of the mess in the water. We're not talking about, it's not so much such a harim over there. Let's say the water was shallow enough that it could have been visible, yeah. the whole davar shematame milamayla kilamata, and as well anything else that's matame from above, just as it does from below, which is more points out. These three is zav v'zava. That comes to include the case of a zav and a zava. The din of a zav and a zava is a zav, for example, when you have tumas midras that we talk about all over Shas. It doesn't just apply, for example, if a zav sits on a chair, the chair becomes tummy. If a zav were to sit on a pile of blankets, for example, not only the top blanket that he sits on is tummy, but even the bottom one is. That's what it means. So tumah goes all the way through. And the other way around also. If you have, for example, a zav, let's say, sits on a heavy stone, thank you, and underneath it there are kalim and things. We talked about this a week or two ago, Evan Masama it's called, then never all those kalim are still tummy.
Every layer underneath,
right. And there's also Yoinoshal Zav, there's also things that are above the Zav, this concept is called Halacha Madaf. And in modern Hebrew they use Madaf to mean a shelf, but in Gemara terminology, Madaf means, for example, you have a Zav, let's say, sitting on a chair or something, and you have things above it.
We sit on this chair, above us.
No, meaning when we say above us, it doesn't mean, for example, the ceiling is not going to become tummy. But if you had, for example, if the shelves of the heel were sticking out above the zav, and there were things on the shelves, then those would become tummy. No, not tummy. That's the din of the zav.
You don't have to wait. If I touch something, if I set the same benches up that on.
You just have to tell yourself and your clothing and the tummy out of it.
Is there a limit to how long does the tummy last on the stone? Forever.
Until it's sprinkled. Okay. Anyway, the point is that we said, so this is called Tolan Rani Grodin, by the way. Some of the Forshim say it applies to all kinds of Tumas, even Tumas Nes, with the exceptions that we mentioned, meaning, in other words, that according to those who are showing him, this din would apply to Tumas Maga and Masa, that if you're not sure if you touch the Nes or not, then the Suffolk you're talking. It's only Tumas Oil that we're talking about, that we don't apply the Suffolk when we say you're talking. On the other hand, the Rambam paskins that the Rambam understands this calling the Tolan Rani Grodin business, like a pillar, it only applies to a sheriff. So therefore, you have a stuff as opposed to a mess. So if you have, for example, somebody holds a piece of a mess on a string, let's say, and now you're not, well, that we said actually even with a sheriff, you tell me. Rather, if somebody throws, let's say, a piece of a mess, and you're not sure whether it touched you or not, then the stuff it could be telling. We don't apply this thing of that throne is misafik is tar.
The
sheretz we would say is different. That's what we're saying. That's the point of the Rambam is Kani Tolan Rani Grodin and Rani Zrokin applies to my sheretz. Okay, by Rami Bachama. Rami Bachama asks now a question in this connection. This whole din of tumah safa, floating tumah. What if you have mess decree? What if you have a piece of a mess in a utensil? Uklid sof up niyamayim, and then that utensil, that keli, is floating on the water. Mahu. So then what do we say? So we're not talking about the keli is not itself full of water. The keli is empty. All that's in it is this kizayis in a mess, let's say. But the keli is floating on the water. Mahu. So what's it did? Basa kli as linen and basa misa as linen. Do we go according to the keli or do we go according to the dead person? If we look at it from the perspective of the keli, then it's floating. If you look at it from the perspective of the mess, it's not floating. It's sitting there inside the keli.
It's not Haaretz.
Forget about Haaretz. We say, do we focus on the keli is floating, or do we focus on the mess is not? Now, there's a different gears over here, though. We just mentioned that according to the Rambam, this whole concept of tumah safa doesn't apply to mess anyway. So therefore, there's a different girsa. Rather than mess the kli, rather that the girsa is sheretz the kli. Because if it was a mess, then you wouldn't have the whole question. You'd be telling me misafik no matter what if it's vishus ayachid. Okay. And also, by the way, there's a different girsa. So according to that girsa also, instead of misa, the word would be maya. As we go according to the water. Do we focus on the water and the keli is floating in it, or do we focus on the keli and inside the keli is this piece of a sheretz which is not floating? That was as far as Nizrakin. There's four different things we're talking about over here. No, Nizrakin is not necessarily like Safa. There's Nitolin Vani Grodin, there's Nizrakin, and then there's Safa.
So what's the gather from Nizrokin?
Nizrokin is when it's being thrown.
No, because it's like Sofer.
It's similar, but it's not identical. I mean, as a matter of fact, Tosfos at the bottom of Sanach Gimel Amud Beis asks the question that when we say that Sofer is not Tomei, is it Davka Al Pnei HaMayim, or maybe even if it's in the air, because then it's also the equivalent of Sofer. It's not Al Ha'aretz. So Tosfos leaves it unanswered. Okay. Okay, so let's say then that the answer would be we focus on the Keli, and in that case then we would say that if we say we go according to the Keli, then we would say the Keli is floating on, we would say that the Keli is, there's actually, there's a few different ways of explaining what this Bosa Kliyaz Linen. In particular, the Rambam Paskins, it means that we're machmir, we say we look at the fact that the sheret is inside the keli and not flooring. Therefore, we would consider him tamei misafek. On the other hand, another way of looking at it is that which is how the Rosh seems to learn it, is that Bosa Kliyaz Linen would mean that we go lekula. Rashi says it. Rashi says it the first way that I said, but the Rosh says it the second way, that after all the kli is soft, it's flooring. So therefore, you should go lekula. Okay. Anyway, what about mess on gabe sheretz? Mahu? What if you have a piece of a mess on top of a sheretz? Or again, Hagoros Hagurah flips it around because the Rambam's girsa, it seems the Rambam had a distinctly different girsa than our printed Gemara over here, because we'll talk about at the end what the Rambam asked about this whole series of questions. But according to that, the girsa would have to be the other way around. Sheretz on gabe mess. If you have a piece of sheretz on top of a piece of a mess. Mahu, so then what do we say? Kiven the high tumas erev, the high tumas shiva. Now, with a sheret, is only matame you for that day. You should go to the mikveh and that evening your tahor. Whereas a mess, your tahor for 7 days. Therefore, we should consider it two different kinds of things. Kamanda mach the tumor of a klidamia. Therefore, we should consider it the equivalent of the tumor sitting inside a keli, because it's different. The fact that you have a different kind of tumor there makes it effectively the equivalent of a keli with something inside it. Or maybe no, maybe we should argue that it's considered like one stick, like one big thick piece of tuma, and therefore we're back to tuma tzofa. And therefore we said that sheret to tuma tzofa is fine, so then you'd be fine. The imkim kolam to manda mach the tuma bikliyam. If you're going to say that we consider the tuma to be sitting in a keli, let's ask another possibility. The tomei vaday, and then you would say that he's tomei for sure. So then, sheretz are gabi nevelo and nevelo tzofa mahu. Then what would you say? How about if you have a piece of a sheretz sitting on top of a piece of a nevelo of an animal, and the whole thing is floating? Kiven de tavayu tumas erev yinu. Now, there you have both of them are tumas erev. Neither one of them makes you tamei for any more than a day. Both of them, you go to the sheretz or nevelo, you go to the mikveh and you tell her that, evening. Therefore, tumas smichti. Therefore, we should consider it again like one big piece of tumah and apply the rule of tumas tzofa. Or maybe, after all, yes, there's no difference in the time of tuma, but there's a difference in the amount that makes you tummy. A sheretz, you'll need kadosha, the size of a lentil, to make you tummy. A nevela, you need a kazayis to make you tummy by touching it or carrying it. That's the point. Maybe is there a difference? You could argue, it depends. That's why the Gemara is putting them together with imkim tzoloimah. If you would answer in the previous case with a sheretz and a mess, that we consider it as though it was one big tumor, well, then there's no question. Obviously, all the more so, a sheretz and a nevela would be the same thing. But if we consider them to be two different things, then you have the next question, is that only because there's a difference in the time of the tumor, or does it also make a difference the amount that makes your tumor? Okay. How about, let's ask another question then. Sheretz agabe sheretz, mahu. What if you have... Wait, we'll get to that at the end. Sheretz agabe sheretz mahu. What if you have further? What if you have one piece of sheretz on top of another piece of sheretz? One dead sheretz on top of another. Hani vade chachur ininu. So they are obviously okay. You do have the same shear and the same amount of tumah. So there might be no reason to think of them as anything different. Consider even the top sheretz to be as if it was attached to the other one, and therefore it's one big tumah, and therefore the whole thing is called tumah tzofa. Or maybe not. They are, after all, two different sheretzim. So maybe then each one is considered a unit unto its own. The bottom one, therefore, if you had a sofek, whether you touched it, fine, tumat sofa. The top one wouldn't be tumat sofa, according to what we started at the world. That depends, how we understand the first question in the series. where we said if you have a sheret in a keli, do we consider the sheret to be a floating tumah, or do we not, depending whether we look at it from the point of view of it's inside the keli or from the point of view of the keli, that'll affect how we understand the rest of these questions. If we said at the beginning, which is the way the Rambam says it, that when the sheret is in a keli, we do consider it to not be floating, that we consider because the sheret is staying put inside the keli, therefore it's not a tumah, according to the Rambam, according to his understanding of the sugya, therefore it's not considered tumah tzofa, well then, going back now to our case over here, sheret agave sheret, would be the same thing. If we say that the two sheretim are considered as separate entities, then we would say that's considered a sheret in a keli. And you'd have the same thing, right?
Sheret is considered for the first one.
So the bottom one, if you touch it, if you're not sure whether you touched it, fine, that's tumat sofa. But the top one, you would be tummy. On the other hand, according to the Rosh's understanding, you would say, since originally in the case of the keli, we said you focus on the fact that the keli is floating, you ignore the fact that the sheret itself is not, then therefore you would say the same kind of thing over here. You would say that the Gemara is that we might assume, If you consider it, so we'd say either way, if it's considered tumah smichta, if it's considered one thick tumah, then obviously it's tumah tzofa. And if we consider it to be two separate things, okay, fine, but it's still a sheret inside a keli. And according to the Rosh, we established that a sheret inside a keli, or at least we brought up the possibility that a sheret inside a keli is tumah tzofa, yeah. Okay, how about another one? Fine. Let's say then that a sheret on top of another sheret, well, since they are two separate things, then it's considered that as if it was placed in a keli. Let's ask another possibility then. Sheret agave nevela sheni moicha mahu. What if you have a sheret sitting on top of a piece of nevela that dissolved? So in other words, you have a piece of a piece of a nevela from a dead animal that, as we learned a couple of weeks ago in connection with Netzel, that the flesh dissolved and became like a gelatin kind of thing. And now you have a sheret sitting on top of that in the water. So then what's it did? Kivin din morcha habile mashke. Do we say since it dissolved, since it liquefied, then therefore now it's no longer considered oichel? Now it's not considered a solid thing anymore, it's considered a mashke. And then therefore you have the top sheret is floating in mashke. It is floating on a liquid. Or maybe you say, after all, it started out as food and it's still considered food to that extent. It's not considered, so therefore this isn't tumat sofa. The intim salam to oichlahu, if you're going to answer that in this case, yes, you would consider it food because it started out as a solid. Let's ask another question. Sheret agave shichvas derech, what if you have a sheret floating on top of shichvas derech in the water? Shichvas derech obviously started out as a liquid. It started out as a liquid. On the other hand, you might argue that it came out of a person's body and it comes out. Now there's a difference. There's a concept that Gemara mentioned in a couple of places called misagil v'yotze, which means you have certain kinds of liquids that come out of a person's body where before they come out, like they collect in one place. Misagil literally means it becomes round. Spit is like that, for example, you have a gob of spit in your mouth, and then it accumulates, like, right. Meirag lion, urine is like that, a couple of different things are like that. That makes a difference. On the other hand, you have other kinds of liquids. That's the sort of the difference as far as in connection with tumas zov and zova and the rest of that group. There's a difference between various mashkim that come out of their body, which ones are matame, the same thing as the zov, for example, and which ones are not. There's nine different kinds of liquids that we could be talking about. Three of them have one din, three of them have another din, I forget what the details are, but the reason is because the Pasuk mentions, so this is getting a little off topic over here, but in connection with the Zav, the Pasuk mentions the case if a Zav spits on a person who's Tahar, then the person who's Tahar, who the spit landed on him, becomes Tomei Tumas Erev, he and his clothing. He becomes an Avatumer, his clothes become Tomei, and he has to dip in the mikveh and dip his clothes in the mikveh. And he's Tomei till the evening. So the Gemara explains, in Nida and I think in some other places also, that the reason why the Torah mentions spit is because spit is one of those things that misagil v'yotze. It accumulates before it comes out. In other words, the difference is, as opposed to other kinds of liquids that come out of the body, certain other kinds of liquids which don't accumulate first.
Blood
would be an example. Tears is another one.
Would not make the other, that's right.
They're at least not to the same extent. It wouldn't make him tummy. Wouldn't make him and his clothes tummy, at least, yeah. So we're using a similar kind of logic over here. I mean, the Rashi and the other Mefarshim over here don't mention the word Misag over here, but it seems to be sort of the same kind of idea. Shichmas Zerda is not one of those things that accumulates before it comes out. So therefore, you could argue that it can't really be considered a mashke. In that sense, it's sort of more like an oichel. It's sort of more like the equivalent of the piece of the nevela that liquefied that we just talked about. So given to Misakra, Avalek Yo'echel, we could argue, since it comes out without collecting in one place first, maybe therefore it's considered more like Oichel. Well, then let's ask another possibility. Sheretz Agave Mechaf. That's what if you have a sheretz floating on top of Parah Adruma water, where the Parah Adruma water is, what is it? It's water that was mixed with the ashes of the Parah Adruma, which makes it, so there's two things about such water. First of all, then, it's thicker than regular water because it has the ashes mixed into it, so therefore it's not pure water. It's already a little more viscous. And second of all, mechatas have a certain degree of tumah of their own. If you touch mechatas with, I mean, you're not using them for sprinkling, then you become tummy. The water that was mixed with the ashes of the Parah Adruma. The kohen who sprinkles that doesn't become tamei. That's a common mistake. We've talked about this many times, when the pasuk says, "Omaze mehanibi chavis gadav," it doesn't actually mean a kohen who sprinkles the Parah Adruma water on somebody who's tamei. It means somebody who handles the Parah Adruma water enough to sprinkle, but not for the purpose of sprinkling. Be that as it may, so there's two things about mechatas. It's thicker than ordinary water because it's got the ashes mixed into it, and it has its own tumah. So mechatas sofen al gabei amayim, and then you have this mechatas floating on regular water, mabu. So what would be the din? So we don't know, and therefore teku. Now what happens with all these dinim? So you have this whole series of questions of Rami Bachamas. The Rambam's usual rule, and all over the place, is when the Gemara has a series of questions and joins them together with Imtim Tzolaymer, we talked about this before, that the Rambam paskins like the Imtim Tzolaymer. In our case of here, for example, we started off by asking the case of a mess in a keli, and the keli is floating on the water. Then we said, Imtim Tzolaymer, that you go according to the keli, then let's ask the next case, a mess on top of a sheretz, or a sheretz on top of a mess, as the case may be. So that's an example where the Rambam would then say that since the Gemara uses the possibility that we go according to the Keli as a basis for the next question, then that indicates the halacha must be you go according to the Keli. Since the Rambam understands in our connection that going according to the Keli means that we focus on what's inside the Keli, the sheriff is inside the Keli and not floating, therefore it's not considered Tumah Safa, then the Rambam holds that means the halacha is that the Tumah inside the Keli is not considered Tumah Safa, and therefore you're Tumah. Even Masafet, which leads him to Paskin in most of the other cases that we just talked about, but also you're talking Masafet, the case of a sheretz on top of another sheretz, because we established that that's similar to it being in a keli, the case of it being on top of a piece of nevela that liquefied, etc.
We consider the keli first, in
other words? We according to the Rambam, effectively what we're doing is, yeah, we consider, we don't focus on the fact that the keli is floating in the water, we focus on the fact that the sheretz is sitting quite peacefully inside the keli. And not moving around, it's not tougher. Therefore, it's coming. The mechatas one that Rambam says being the last one in the chain is left as a suffix. And there, the Rambam says an unusual thing. Usually, we would say that teku means we're machmir with suffix. Here, the Rambam says since this whole concept was only drabanan anyway, this whole concept of suffix tumah of suffix tumah in these cases, then we're makel.
In all the other cases,
we would say that it is considered, that it's not considered tumat safa, and therefore you're tamei. Yeah. Omer Nachamnova. Nozir v'oisa Pesach shahochu b'kever atahoyim b'shvii shalahem. If you have a nozir who became tamei, and now he's gone through his sprinkling, and he's going to have to start over his nazirus, and then or an oisa Pesach, somebody who's on his way to bring the korban Pesach, same thing, he became tamei and he's finishing up his tahara on Erev Pesach, so he can bring his korban Pesach later in the day. Shehocha b'kever atahoyim b'shvii shalahem, and then they walked over a kever atahoyim on their seventh day of their tahara, tahorim, then they remain tahor. In both cases, at this point, we assume, we're talking about, because I was going to deal with this soon, at this point, we assume that the cases with both of them, they didn't find out about the Tumas HaTahorim until later on. The Oitzah Pesach didn't find out until he was actually Makir with Korban Pesach, and the Nazir didn't find out until he did until he finished his Nazirus all over again and did his Siglakas Tara. So then we say they're Tahor. Even though, yes, it is true that they were Tomei and then they were Tomei originally, and now they're finishing becoming Tahor, and now unknowingly they became Tomei on the very day they were finishing being Tahor. Doesn't matter. My time, why is that? Because Tumas HaTahorim is not strong enough to make them have to lose their ability to bring the Korban Pesach, or in this case, not the ability to bring the Korban Pesach, but the fact that they'd have to be Nitchel Pesach Sheni, or in the case of the Nazir, to make him have to start all over again. That's basically what we're saying, yeah. However, Masiv Rava contradicts that, I have a contradiction. Our Mishnah says, Yorab Mitaim Mechumas HaMes, our Mishnah described the case where Nazir was Tomei Mes, and he went into a cave to Tovel from Chumas Mes, Tomei, and then later on, you find a mess at the bottom of the cave, which is a Chumas HaTahorim. Then we say Tomei, Shechazkas Tomei Tahor, Shechazkas Tahor Tahor. The Chazaka of somebody with Tomei is that he remains Tomei until we know for sure that he became Tahor, and the Chazaka of a Tahor is he remains Tahor until we have reason to suspect him of being Tomei. In this case over here, this Nazir was Tomei. So what are you telling me? That because it was the seventh day, it's only Tomei such a time, yeah. Amalei, so he says to him, or the Rosh says, the Rosh says that actually Abaya comes in to the conversation, and we hear Amalei Abaya. You know what? I would agree with you, actually, in a case where the Nazir found out before he got his haircut that he would be Tomei. Yeah. The Tiglachas Tumah, that is. The Tiglachas Tumah. If he became Tomei on a seventh day, but he hasn't yet, the next day he's supposed to do a Siglachas Tumah and bring his Korbanus and start his Nazirus over again, or actually we had before the discussion whether he's supposed to do it on the seventh day or the eighth day. Whatever. If it was before he did his Tiglachas and then he finds out, sure, then I agree. He'll have to start over again. But the Mishnah, so that's what the Mishnah is talking about over here. Because what did the Mishnah say? Yorab Litzvah, he went down to Tovel. Obviously this is before he cut his hair.
Yeah.
Fine. Where's Rav Hanina talking about where he found out only after his Tiglachas Tumah?
That's more complicated.
But wait. Amalei Rava. So Rava says, "Well, wait a minute. Then, if that's all it is, fine. In that case, then I mean, I'm going to agree with you by a Pesach, by somebody who's going to bring the Korban Pesach. Where at that point, after he's been sprinkled the last time, he's not lacking anything because at that point he's just ready to bring the Korban Pesach. So basically, in other words, what's the great Kiddush then?"
He's going to bring his Pesach,
and you're telling me so in that case then, in other words, what kind of chiddush is Rav Hamnuna telling us? The same way as by the Nazir, we'll make a distinction whether he did his Tiglachas Tumah or not. If he didn't do his Tiglachas Tumah yet, as the case the Mishnah is talking about, where he has to start all over again. Whereas, because Cheska Satomei Tomei, on the other hand, Rav Hamnuna is talking about if he already did his haircut. Fine, but if he already did his haircut, and that's the same as an Oitzah Pesach, where he got sprinkled the last time, and there's nothing else lacking except for him to go bring his Korban Pesach, so then what's the Chiddush? Amalei Abaya says to him, I can tell you there is a Chiddush, while I'm a Chosur Herod of Shemesh. Yes, because when you think about it, after all, the Nazir and the Oitzah Pesach are lacking something. The sun still has to go down. They're not fully Tahor yet. In the case of the Nazir, he may have already had his hair cut. In the case of the Oitzah Pesach, he's been sprinkled the last time and Tovel. But they still have to wait till the end of the day. They still have to wait till Tzeis HaKachamim to be fully Tahor.
The Nazir still has to wait
until the day? Yeah. Any person who becomes Tamei Mes, any person who becomes, and most people who need the Tovel in general need Herod of Shemesh. Amalei, so Rava answers him, that's not such a Chiddush. Shimshim Mela Arva. The sun goes down on its own. Meaning, in other words, so therefore it's not considered, you're not considered to be lacking anything just because you're still a Tzvul Yod. When you're lacking something would mean that you're lacking something which you yourself have yet to do. Or actually, Tosfos points out even more than that, that even tovaling is not necessarily considered mechusa maisi yet, because tovaling, you always, there are mechusas available all over the place. A person can go toval anytime, it's fine. But when do we consider it mechusa maisi? When do we consider it that he's still lacking something? Is, for example, the nazir's haircut, where it's not just fine, shaving his hair he can do himself, but bring the carbonates he can't do himself, and he's a kohen to do it for him. So that's considered mechusa maisi. As opposed to head of Shemesh, which is something that happens automatically, and even Tosfos says, toveling, which is something that he has, biyode, something that he's able to do, neither of those makes him consider mechusa maisa.
So
when Rav Hamnuna wants to make a distinction between whether the Nazir got his haircut, got his tiglachas tumah or not yet, that is a big difference. There's a big difference between if he hasn't had the haircut yet, he's mechusa maisa. At that point, if he finds out that he was tomer from tumas atahorim, he will be soser.
Right.
Whereas if he's not mechusa maisa anymore, then he's not soser.
Everybody agrees with that?
So far, no. So far, the Gemara seems to be saying that Abaye and Rava are disagreeing on that point. The head of Shemesh make him mechusa maisa. But the Gemara points out that Abaye Hodebe, as a matter of fact, we find that Abaye himself changed his mind as well, and later on ended up agreeing that head of Shemesh does not make him a chosim maisa. How so? The Tanya, we learn in the Braisa. So it means that Abaye basically is agreeing with Rava. That in the case of an Osa Pesach, there's no distinct. Once he's had his last sprinkling, everything else is biyadei or it's memela arva, and therefore at that point, then at that point he's not soser. And with another, we'll make a similar distinction then between whether if he had his haircut already, then he's not soser nice anymore. If he didn't have his haircut yet, then he is. As we learn in the Braisa, so this discussion that we're going to have in the Braisa is talking about the din of a woman having to bring korbanos after she gives birth, a yoledes.
So this Braisa will confirm?
This Braisa will confirm, at the end, after the discussion of the Braisa, we'll see how Abaye changed his mind. We'll see from what he says, on what he comments on the Braisa.
Because of this Braisa.
Let's learn the Braisa and we'll see. So we know the Torah says that when a woman gives birth, if she gave birth to a boy, then she after 40 days she has to bring a korban. If it's a girl, after 80 days. So you know we talked about earlier in the Masechta in connection with the Nazir, we talked about Toich Malois and Acha Malois, the days during the period of Nazirus, or 30 days or however long he declared Nazirus, versus Acha Malois, after the days of Nazirus are completed, when he's supposed to at that point be bringing a korban. With the Yoledes, you have a similar concept, Toich Malois and Acha Malois. Toch Malois would mean during the first 40 days after the birth, or 80 days for a girl, and Acha Malois would be the 41st or the 81st day. So the Braisa says, Yom Malois Tavi, if a woman miscarried on the Yom Malois, meaning on the 41st day or 81st day, then she has to bring another carbon. Toch Malois Lo Tavi, but if she had a miscarriage during the Malois, then she doesn't bring. So in other words, she had a boy, for example. She had a boy, let's say, on Rosh Hashanah. 40 days from that brings it to Yud Cheshvan. So now on Yud Aleph Cheshvan, she should be bringing her Korbanos. If she were to, in between, she got pregnant again and miscarried on Yud Cheshvan, that's still Toch Malois. That's still during the 40 days. Therefore, when she brings the Korban on Yud Aleph, that will include both of them. She doesn't have to bring a separate Korban. But if she were to miscarry on Yud Aleph or any time after Yud Aleph before she got around to bringing her korban, she would have to bring a separate korban for that one. There's no soyser. You can't really talk about soyser. There is, I mean, with the Yoledes, so the din is so you have she for 7 days for a boy, 14 days for a girl, she's toveh, like a nigga. For the next 33 for a boy, 66 for a girl, she's yeshevet al dam tohar. Any bleeding that she experiences during that time does not make her tamei. She's still mutter to her husband. That's how it's possible for her to become pregnant and miscarry again during that period. By the way, nowadays we don't do according to that. Nowadays we hold that there's no such thing as dam tohar. Any uterine blood that comes from a woman makes her offset to her husband, regardless whether it was before, after, or whatever when it happened exactly. But I'll piece in Torah that Amma mentions, by the way, that in his times, that in Sarfas in France, they still held by the dinim of Dam Torah. They still used to hold that during those 33 or 66 days, we consider the woman Torah to her husband. But apparently in the Rambam at times already, the Sfaradim didn't, and later on everybody took that on. Anyway. So we're not getting into that. If she miscarries, if she miscarries, of necessity she's going to be Tomei later again anyway. So we're not even getting into Soser or not. I mean, the days that she was Tomei, she was Tomei. The days of Dam Toha, she was Toher. I mean, when she miscarries, she'll be Tomei again on account of the miscarriage. There's no Soser to talk about, but there is a question, does she have to bring a separate carbon or not? So far what we're saying is, if she miscarried on or before the 40th day, or 80th day if she had a girl beforehand, then the korban for the first one also includes the second one. But if she miscarried on or after the 41st or the 81st day, then she has to bring a separate korban. Yachol continues the Braisa. Yachol lo tavi al leida shelifnei melois. Okay, so you would think then that maybe she doesn't have to bring a korban for a birth, for a miscarriage, that is, before melois. Aval tavi al leida shelacha melois v'tipata mishnehen. But maybe she should have to bring a korban for birth after Malois, the part of Mishnayan, as a Mishnayan, is a little difficult to understand, and most of the Forshim take it out. But basically, we can have a scenario like this. What if you have, for example, what if there was a series of such miscarriages? What happens, for example, let's say, so a woman gave birth, again, let's say, on Rosh Hashanah, 64 days later, Tosfos gives the example, I don't know why they'd have to say 64 days, why that figure, but okay, whatever. Whatever, let's use Tosfos' figure, 64 days. So that brings us to early Kislev, Dalet Kislev, let's say. She has a miscarriage. Then she becomes pregnant again, sometime again. She's Tomei for another 7 or 14 days, whatever. Then she's with her husband again. Another 64 days later, so now you're talking about early Shvat, Ches Shvat, or thereabout. She has another miscarriage. So now, let's figure out then. Originally, on Rosh Hashanah, she had had a girl. So she had 80 days of melos. The 80 days, therefore, include the time of the first miscarriage. 80 days is going to run to a Chof Kislev. She miscarried on Dalet Kislev. Therefore, as we said before, she can bring one carbon for both of them. Now, after melos, she had another one. So it's within melos of the second one, but not within melos of the first one.
So she had
a second miscarriage, right. So far she had a girl, and she had two miscarriages, right. So you would think that maybe she has to bring a korban for the one after Malois, the Tipot of Mishnah, again, let's take that out. In other words, let's assume that maybe it means that she has to bring one korban to cover the first two and another korban to cover the third one. Time of Loima, no. Therefore, the pasuk says, "When Loisi may tara," no. At the completion of her days of tara, implying beyond Malois tavi, only if she had the baby on Malois or after it, does she have to bring another korban? Tos Malois right tavi. If it was Tos Malois, she does not have to bring. So in this case, even though the second baby was long after Malois of the baby born Rosh Hashanah, but since it was Tos Malois of a previous baby, then therefore they're all covered by the same, they'll all end up, all three of those, the live baby girl and the other two miscarriages, will all be covered by one carbon.
First one. The second one.
The first and the second and the third. Even though they were each 64 days apart, which means the second one is more than 4 months after the first one, long after Malois, because Malois for a girl was only 80 days. But since it was within Malois of the previous one, and therefore, they're all covered, and the previous one is interred within Malois of the first one. Therefore, they're all covered by the one carbon.
Which one?
Whatever, she'll bring one carbon, and that covers all three of them.
At the end of,
after Malois, after you made Malois of the third one, so sometime in Nissan, she'll bring a carbon for all three of them. Yeah.
The
Talmud Loma, that's why the pasuk says, "Rimlois me tara," at the completion of her days of tara, implying beyond Malois tavi, Tos Malois lo tavi. She only brings a korban for a baby born on or after Malois, but not Tos Malois. So Omer Rav Kahana. So Rav Kahana says, "Why is that? Shiny hocha? Because the reason why we say that is because it's different over here. The mechasra korban. Because why do you say that? Why do you say that all three of them can be included within the one korban? Because she's still lacking a korban. She still hasn't had a chance to bring a korban from the first one because she then became pregnant again and miscarried within 80 days. So she never finished out the 80 days of Melois from the first one to have a chance to bring a carbon. And again, by the time she was Acha Melois of the second one already, she had miscarried the third one.
Every miscarriage was in the
top reset the clock. It's kind of reset the clock.
So therefore,
that's what Rav Kahana is saying. That is why we say that she only has to bring one carbon for all of them, because she never reached a time when she's able to bring a carbon.
Shiny means what?
Shiny means it's different.
It's different. But what is it?
Why do we say why do we say one carbon for all three of them? Why shouldn't we say that the third one is not included in the first one? Because the second one, she never had a chance when she was able to bring a carbon. So now the question is, Hossam Nami, Michzer Her of Shemesh. Well, in that case, if you're gonna go by that logic, what about, for example, the normal situation is that at the end of the 2 weeks after a girl, let's say, the woman totals, after that she has a special din, she's called Tvulas Yom Oruch. Effectively, she's like a law. The next 66 days is effectively like one long day. During all of it, she's considered Tvul Yom. At the end of those 66 days, then the next day, the 81st day, she brings her carbon, and then she's able to eat kachim again. Now, what were to happen? Let's say she didn't tovel at the end of those 2 weeks. What happens at the end of 80 days? She's not yet able to bring her carbon because she has to tovel first. And Hossam Nami Michzer Her of Shemesh. And in that case, once she does Tovel, she's going to need Her of Shemesh. Maybe if she Tovels on the 14th day, then the next 66 days constitutes one long Her of Shemesh for her. But if she didn't Tovel during all that time, then afterwards, eventually, when she Tovels, she's going to need Her of Shemesh. Shouldn't you argue by the same logic that she's lacking something? So in other words, you shouldn't say a blanket statement that if a woman miscarries on the 81st day, she always has to bring another carbon. No, it should depend on whether she Tovels and had Her of Shemesh yet or not. And on that, I'm going to buy a shimshim mela arva. So on that, Abaya answers to him, no, that's not considered mechutz maisa because the sun goes down on its own.
And that's got nothing to do with
that. Right, meaning in other words, therefore, she's not considered mechutz maisa.
Right.
So now, the point, what's the relevance of that to here? Before we had Abaya pointing out that a person who doesn't have head of shemesh is considered mechutz maisa, and Rava answered him that Shimshim Mela Arva, the sun goes down on its own, therefore you're not Mechutz Maisa. Based on this discussion about the Yoledes, we see that Abaya changed his mind and agreed with Rava's idea that Her of Shemesh is not considered Mechutz Maisa, Shimshim Mela Arva, and that's why we say that with a woman, regardless whether she had toiled or not, the fact that 80 days have passed since the birth, and only now did she miscarry or have a live birth, as the case may be, that makes her required to bring another carbon, regardless of whether she had terrible or not, regardless of whether she had a head of shemesh or not.
Why did he need to impress our body to change his mind?
He didn't use the brayta to change his mind. Based on how he explained when Rav Kahana said that the reason why she's potter from a second carbon or a third carbon is because she's mechutzer carbon, then when the Bnei HaYeshiva asked, well, what about, couldn't there also be a situation where she's mechutzer the head of Shemesh, then Abaya answers Shimshim Mela Arva, and the fact that he used that answer shows that now he agrees to that concept of Shimshim Mela Arva. But now, he didn't need the Braita to change his mind, but this is the answer that he gave to explain the din in the Braita. And if he hadn't held of that concept, if he'd still disagreed with Rava, he couldn't have used that answer. So we see now that he ended up agreeing with Rava. So therefore, going back to the Nazir and the Oseh Pesach, again, we can go back to the same distinction that we had before, that it depends whether he's actually Mechutzer Maaser or not. Again, a lack of head of Shemesh is not considered Mechutzer Maaser. A lack of Tovelin, Tosfos says, is also not considered Mechutzer Maaser because it's B'yadoi. Only something that's not B'yadoi, as in the Nazir bringing his Torbanos. B'yadoi meaning that they have it in their power to do on their own, without needing somebody else. Where there's a carbon, you need to pray and do it right. Incidentally, by the way, Tosfos and the Rosh both point out over here another possibility, another possible explanation that some people explain what we meant over here about the lack of head of Shemesh in the case of the Yoledes. They both reference something that we learned in Chagiga last year, that at the end of Chagiga, when we had a whole complicated sugi over there about Milas to Rabbanan, about the cases when you have to tovel to go from one level to another to Rabbanan, one of them was a case where somebody who has not yet brought a korban, not only do they need to bring their korban in order to eat kachin, that's the Araita, but the Rabbanan, they also need to tovel before they eat kachin. And therefore, the argument is, maybe what the Gemara is talking about over here, about the Yaledis, toveling and needing hair of Shemesh, we're talking about that Yaledis. But Tosfos and the Rosh both disagree with that, because the Gemara clearly says over there, you don't need hair of Shemesh, all you need is the tovel. Since the whole concept of toveling there, once they brought their carbon, the two birds or whatever for Yaledis, then at that point, Midrabanan, they need to tovel, but that's it. Midrabanan didn't also make them required to do hair of Shemesh. So therefore, you can't say that that's what the Gemara means over here. We have to say that we're talking about the head of Shemesh again from the fact that she needed to tovel 14 days after the birth of her daughter, and she didn't. Good night, Ellie.